are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. What's on the program to put some money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. Let's get right down to business. We've got some great guests on the program today. Dave Malinsky will join us straight from the Strip of Las Vegas, Nevada. SBR, sportsbookreview.com, Vegas Point Blanks, Dave Malinsky, the professor, will join us. We'll talk some NFL football, man. We're down to the Final Four in the National Football League, and who better to help us break it down than the man that I call the professor. We'll see what Dave thinks about tonight's basketball card, as well be it in the NBA or college basketball. I've got a bunch of college basketball picks for you, a couple NBA plays, and a couple of NHL plays that we'll share with you and throw at you a little bit later on in the program. Tony Sincada is going to join us. We'll talk some NFL football with Tony. We'll talk NFL football. We'll talk NFL DFS. We'll also talk NBA DFS with Tony Sincada as well. I think there's only four games on top tonight in the association. We'll break them down. We've got opinions from a betting perspective on these games, but we'll break them down from a DFS perspective as well. Things got pretty heated last night in the National Basketball Association, MLK Day. You know, we knew that, it's a day that matters to NBA players, all right? So we knew that there, you know, the energy level was going to be there. We didn't realize there was going to be so many confrontations. Ben Simmons and Kyle Lowry get into it at the end of the game, and Ben Simmons sort of insinuated to Lowry, like, meet me in the tunnel after type of deal, as the Philadelphia Sixers, probably the most annoying team in basketball. It's hard to be more annoying than Lonzo and LaVar Ball, but they've actually managed to do it. You know, they're good players. They're a good young team. They're kind of clueless late in basketball games. But, man, do they talk a lot for a team that really hasn't ever done anything. But, nevertheless, that was nothing compared to the Clippers and the Rockets. Things got so bad, the LAPD had to intervene last night and tell everybody to chill out. My favorite part of this, so Chris Paul goes back last night. My bad, man. The Clippers were a hot team. They were banged up. You know, it was only 4 points. Thought Chris Paul and his return to Los Angeles could get it done with the Rockets. The Rocket players really didn't seem to care all that much. There was no sense of urgency with the Rockets, and the Clipper players evidently don't like Chris Paul very much, as we saw last night. But Blake Griffin, big tough guy Blake Griffin, I don't know, D'Antoni says that Griffin intentionally shoved him. That's when they were going at it. I didn't really see any intentional real shove. There was a lot of smack talk going back and forth. Chris Paul actually took a shove at Griffin. Trevor Ariza got kicked out of the game. Ariza wanted to beat everybody up after the game. My favorite part, though, is that the Houston Rocket players actually got into the Clippers locker room after and wanted, you know, for a confrontation. Now, there's different reports. Some people are, oh, the cops had to intervene and it was crazy and they called the cops. Whatever. The cops were already there. You know, the cops are already there outside the room. All that was what was happened is, basically, this is what's funny about it, though. Clint Capella of the Houston Rockets was sent to the front door. So he went and he knocked on the door of the Clippers locker room after the game. Clipper players open the door. They see it's Clint Capella. They slammed the door on him. They told him to F off and slam the door. But Clint Capella was sent as a distraction. Clint Capella was sent as a distraction. While he was doing that, Chris Paul was sneaking him in some sort of side back door to the room that Chris Paul knows about because he was in that room forever. And then it led to a confrontation. I guess the cops came in and told everyone to chill out. But nevertheless, I think it's good. I think it's fun. I mean, the fact of the matter is, listen, we all say that NBA players don't care. That's not true. They do care. They'll just quit when they're down. There's a difference. All right? But they do care. And, you know, it's competitive, man. I'd like to see the Clippers and the Rockets play each other in the playoffs, but the Clippers are a pretty flaky team. Yeah, they can win 5-6 in a row, but they can also lose 5-6 in a row. Nevertheless, the NBA was pretty fun last night, although it sucked because I was on the wrong side of the game. Cleveland Cavaliers, they got problems right now too, man, but that's another story. All right, so we got Dave Malinsky, we got Tony Sincada stepping up, and let's get right down to business, man, as the countdown is on, the National Football League's Final Four is set, and not many people predicted the Jacksonville Jags would be one of the teams left standing. I'll tell you what, Le'Veon Bell didn't think that they'd be one of the teams left standing. As Le'Veon Bell tweeted out about round twos are great, we got a couple of more round twos coming up, insinuating that there's a lot of football left to be played. Mike Mitchell. Mike Mitchell's had quite the year, actually, if you remember. Mitchell got into it with Matt Hasselbeck earlier in the year. And, you know, he seems, ever since then, he seems to get burnt on big plays all the time. He was running his mouth about the Jags and about how it was an easy game. And they're going to know who, you know, the Jags are like, we don't even know who Mike Mitchell is. I guess Mike Mitchell was you know, once again, outside a locker room. So I guess Mike Mitchell was outside the locker room yelling, you all going to know what my name is after the game. There was a great video that we don't have the rights to show, but the Jag players actually went outside the Steelers room after the game. And we're like, where you at, Mitchell? And, yeah, the B word that rhymes with itch was used quite frequently. So the Jacksonville Jaguars basically used this as ammunition, bulletin board material. And I know it's cliche in today's day and age. And you figure once you're in the playoffs, what does this crap matter? Every team wants to win a game anyways. But the Jag players noticed the tweets. Doug Marrone noticed the tweets. And they all talked about it. They were like, man, these guys don't think we've got a chance to beat them, even though we already beat them earlier in the year. And the Jags had fun with it on Twitter after the fact. But the thing is, the Jags have had too much fun with it on Twitter after the fact. And now Jalen Ramsey, Mr. We're always disrespected. Jalen Ramsey actually now guarantees that the Jags are going to not only make the Super Bowl, but he's going to win the Super Bowl. And we go into the Super Bowl, and we're going to win that bitch. Hey, I'm just saying what he said. He's basically guaranteeing it. And he went on after to guarantee. Now, I think the Jag coaching staff probably talked to him and said, you got to shut up about these guarantees. We're playing the New England Patriots. So Ramsey's like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, we'll see you on Sunday type of stuff. Now, the Jag players, listen, they have been disrespected, specifically Blake Bortles, but you notice he's not the one talking right now. But I just find it ironic that they're doing exactly the same damn thing that they were so upset about the Steelers doing. You know, the fact of the matter is the Jags, they have the tools to beat the New England Patriots. They do. You know, defense, check. Best defense in the National Football League right now. These guys are nasty, man. All right? These guys are nasty. Well, best defense, you notice all the defenses that are left standing. The Jags, awesome defense. You know, Minnesota Vikings, awesome defense. Philadelphia Eagles, awesome defense. And the Patriots defense is pretty damn good too, actually. You know, from like week 8 out, after the early debacles, Patriots defense really put it together. They've got a ground game. Patriots aren't great on the ground. You know, they can run with Leonard Fournette. They're a physical football team. We see that pretty boy Tom Brady doesn't like to get roughed up. He doesn't like to get hit. He'll throw the football away. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars can hang around with the New England Patriots and give them all that it can handle. An interesting byline and storyline of this football game is Tom Coughlin. Remember, Tom Coughlin is the general manager and president now of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tom Coughlin is also the head coach of the New York Giants, the only teams to beat Tom Brady in Super Bowls. Right, so Tom Coughlin's been here before. He gets it. He's put together game plans before. And you could argue that the Jags have more talent than the Giants teams did, at least on defense, that beat them. Blake Bortles, well, whatever. If you want to break it down, Blake Bortles versus Tom Brady, then you got a big problem. But at this point in time, Blake Bortles made enough plays to give him the benefit of the doubt, or at least I give him the benefit of the doubt. But beating the New England Patriots over the course of 60 minutes in Foxborough in a championship game is going to be pretty tough. The Patriots have beaten AFC South teams 19 consecutive freaking times right now. Now, listen, I'm going to have my picks later in the week. I'm not locked in right now with anything, all right? It's been an unpredictable playoffs, and I think it could be an unpredictable Final Four as well. We're not locked in right now, but the Jags do. They really do, guys, have all the damn tools to beat the New England Patriots. The question is, can they pull it off? What do you think? Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. The Tony Cincata will join us a little bit later on. We'll talk some NFL football, of course. You know, Tony actually has a great perspective this week. Tony's from Boston. He is a Patriots fan, and he lives in Jacksonville now. You can't make this up. And he also happens to be a pretty damn good DFS player as well. So we're going to talk. We'll talk football with Tony Sincotta. We'll break it down from a fan standpoint, from a betting standpoint, from a DFS standpoint. And then we'll take a break, and then we'll come back with Tony, and we'll just talk NBA DFS with four games on the board this evening. Man, I miss college basketball DFS. The DraftKings college basketball was fun. I was actually pretty good at that. I can't beat Ricky Sanders at this NBA stuff. I could beat him at the college stuff, though. I knew the college. I was good at the college. Come on, man. This is America. Really? Really, you can't have, we can't have fantasy sports on college basketball. That wouldn't be right. God. All right. Anyway, so Tony Sicasio, let's send it to Vegas right now. Dave Malinsky steps up and in and joins us. You can read his column on the front page of sportsbookreview.com. Vegas Point Blank. It's right on the top right corner. Dave, always a pleasure. How you doing?
You know, Dave, when you talk about things like college basketball and fantasy and whatnot, it's one of the big issues that people like myself have, because I've been doing this, for 35 years. I may not be doing the right things each day. I may be butting my heads in the toughest part of the market and not taking advantage of all of the various side components that are out there. There's just such a big menu, but it's still not as big as it should be.
Now, and have you ever played, Dave, DFS before? Now, I guess you can't in Nevada, right? So that's one thing out of the gate. It's blocked. Like, DraftKings is geo-blocked in the state of Nevada.
Yeah, at this point, we can't anyway. The difficulty, though, that I would find, and we do with this in a lot of aspects of the betting market, I don't do a lot with futures on various sports because there are sharper people at it. If I start to play fantasy sports tomorrow, I'm number 812 in line.
Yeah. No, but
so
that's
part of the difficulty.
You are a big numbers guy, though. Now, do you bet props, Dave? Now, you do bet props sometimes. Now, props and fantasy are the same thing, essentially. But look at, I think of your baseball columns on a daily basis. You're very numbers-driven, Dave, which really is just fantasy analytics as well. It drives to the same thing. It's interesting that you say that, actually, because, a guy like Billy Walters, actually, who now, we know his story. But a guy like Billy, actually, he took advantage of everything, didn't he, Dave? It wasn't just like sports gambling. Like, he had guys like looking, all right, there's, these slot machines of this brand pay out a little bit more, so let's pay these. He really was looking for every angle, wasn't he?
He was so meticulous and so thorough. And I think that's what people need to appreciate about whether it's fantasy, whether it's sports betting, whatever. It's actually the guys who put in the most effort and grind. That's where the edges come. We like to believe that there's this particular genius out there, and that genius instinctively picks the winners. No, ends up with the money, Gabe, the people who work the hardest.
And there's no real magic wand, is there, right? There's no magic wand, right?
If there is, I've never seen it. let's just put it that way.
I keep looking for it. I'm looking for the wand. The wand. I keep looking for it. It's funny, actually. I hate to quote this guy. And it was actually a Steve Bannon line with the wand, with the magic wand. Like Steve Bannon, who's like just, human scum and filth of the earth. But at the same point in time, I saw an interview with him, and he said, people think that I'm some sort of like evil genius and I put together these schemes and stuff. He goes, there's no switch. He goes, there's no wand. He goes, you just got to not sleep and work. Outwork the other people. And he said, I outwork the other people. And, I'm not saying he does good work, Dave, but what I'm saying? He had a point, right? Like, even he got it. It's like, no, I'm not a genius. I'm just crazier than these people.
Well, we're gonna learn a lot, because of all things, you bring his name up on the day when he received a subpoena.
Oh, did he just get subpoenaed? I didn't realize that. Yeah, I didn't see that from this morning. Did he just get subpoenaed?
Yeah, we will learn a lot, because one of the things, of course, that he has always been able to avoid is when you're in the media world, you try to avoid being under oath.
Yeah, you're right.
Different story when you're under oath somewhere.
All right, Dave, I don't want to get political or anything like that, but let me just ask you, are you shocked at all when you wake up on a daily basis? Like, can it go lower? Let me just cut to the chase. Can it go lower?
No, and that's what's been fascinating about our cards, because, again, we talk about this from a betting standpoint a lot. There is money bet on these elections. There'll be a lot of money.
Oprah's 12-1 right now.
On the midterms.
Oprah's 12-1 right now. You could bet on Oprah Winfrey. 12-1 that she'll be president.
Here's what is amazing is there is a numbness, literally, to the outrage at this point. I believe there isn't much that can happen that will break through that barrier. People have kind of gotten numb. So as each day goes by and various components get piled on, and we try to look inside of the betting markets, there is a numbness. Now, where I think Oprah could be a value, and I actually put a little bit in pocket last week when it was higher, is she would bring the ability a couple of years from now to break through that lethargy of the numbness that is out there. It would take that sort of a personality to do it. But, yeah, there's a fair amount of betting traffic on politics on a daily basis.
So, Dave jumps on Oprah, jumps on the Oprah train earlier. Yeah, and you got a better number than the 12-1 as well. You know, and it's funny, too. I saw she said, I used to think it would be ridiculous for me to run for president, but now... And then she just sort of shrugged. She goes, now I'm not so sure. It's so ridiculous after the fact. But we'll have a lot of time. And I'll tell you, Dave, Donald Trump is a lot of things, but obviously great for cable news, television ratings, etc., and political betting. I mean, there's always been political betting. And I'm a degenerate, Dave. I've actually bet on, Virginia gubernatorial races in the past, etc. I'm a political junkie. So I bet on this stuff, and it's always been there, but never like this, Dave. I mean, I'm reading somebody's books, somebody's offshore books. They're saying on a daily basis, they're literally getting tens of thousands of dollars on Trump props. Will he get impeached? What will he say next? Like, Trump has been good for business in the sports betting world.
He really has been. Similar to the way that Belichick and the Patriots have been so good in that what they've done in the playoffs, and I think it's big for the Nevada books to have them out there, is a degree of certainty out there. Whether someone's betting on or against, they like something that becomes so well known that they can understand it. Some bettors are going to struggle a little bit.
Dare I say, Dave, that Belichick's a stable genius.
Let's say that there is that stability. And you're flip-flopping. This is where I think bettors are going to struggle a little bit with Vikings-Eagles. Case Keenum versus Nick Foles isn't an easy trigger for bettors to pull. So they can play on or against the Patriots with high degrees of confidence. It's hard for the bettors to have the same degree of confidence in Vikings-Eagles.
Well, you look at this Jags game, Dave. Similar to the Atlanta Falcons last week, they played their fourth game out of their last five on the road. This is a situation that the Jags find them in. The Patriots have won 19 consecutive games against AFC opponents. You and I briefly discussed the Tom Coughlin angle a little bit, and I find that to be very, very interesting. Took a look at the weather here, Dave. Non-factor, 47 degrees, 11-mile-an-hour winds. Not going to be a factor. You talk about the quarterback situation. Listen, Case Keenum or Nick Foles are going to be starting quarterback in the Super Bowl. One of them will be. Everyone talks about Blake Bortles, but they said the same thing last week. Bortles can't make plays enough to beat Pittsburgh. Bortles did make plays enough to beat Pittsburgh. At this point, I mean, they are who they are. Blake Bortles is the quarterback of the team, but he makes plays. He's not turning the ball over at a high rate right now in the postseason. What do you make of this football game, Dave?
How much poise will Jacksonville maintain throughout the game? And that's the big thing, is in terms of physical energy, I don't think fatigue bothers them as much. The travel schedule won't bother them. One is because they're young. Two is the part of the team that wears down the most, the defensive front. Nobody uses more players in their defensive line rotation than Jacksonville. So they can stay fresh. They can put bodies out there. But as the game goes on, as it gets a little more intricate, as decisions get to be made, because Jacksonville didn't beat Pittsburgh by making good decisions. They beat Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh made bad decisions. So when you look at the play calls and the sequences that Tomlin and Haley didn't master, well, New England's not going to give you that breather. So the question will be, physically, Jacksonville is good enough. Mentally, in a close game, can they make the adjustments? And ultimately, that's where they likely come up short.
You know, Dave, I get the same feeling about this football game, that maybe a Jacksonville first half play might be worth a look, Dave. I think, you know, maybe first quarter.
Might get a plus six.
First quarter, even. That the Jags come out, hey, they, you know, even Tennessee scored first on the Patriots. Leonard Fournette runs down the field. They're feeling confident. But like you said, it almost reminds me of, like, the Conor McGregor-Mayweather fight. It's like, yeah, whatever. Conor, you threw some punches in the first four or five rounds. Floyd didn't care. And then he raised it up a notch, and it became a real chess match, and you got killed. So, like you said, can the Patriots – can the Patriots suffocate the Jags? I think eventually the Jags will mentally break down, Dave. I think they hang around physically for a while, make a game of it, maybe first quarter, first half, but eventually over 60 minutes, Brady will break them down.
Well, here's what you want to watch. And since we talked about props and various things in running wagering, so common now, so I'm assuming a lot of the listeners probably have access to that. Something to watch early in the game. Can Jacksonville get to Brady without blitzing? They're one of the few teams where there's enough depth in that defensive line, they might be able to do it. Where Brady gets you in trouble is if you have to resort to blitzes, he will read them so well. Their outlets are so good. Throwing to Amendola on the short stuff, throwing to the running backs. But if Jacksonville gets early pressure without blitzing, that takes some of Brady's advantages away. So from an in-running standpoint, if I see that Jacksonville front four getting there early, that keeps them in the game longer and longer in my mind.
Dave, the Minnesota Vikings and the Philadelphia Eagles total 38. Number's been bouncing around. It was three, three and a half, back to three, three and a half, back up to three and a half again. This is going to be a smash-mouth football game. And look at the pattern, Dave, of the teams playing. And even New England's defense has really tightened things up down the stretch. I mean, they had that early midseason meltdown. But since then, they've been an elite defense. You know, they say the defense wins championships. I thought it was kind of just cliche, Dave, because of, you know, the modern era that we're in right now. But look, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Minnesota Vikings, the Jacksonville Jags, those are all top five defenses. I mean, like, the defense, the good defense gets you, at least this year, these defenses have stepped up. I look at this football game, and it's really going to come down to who makes a mistake, in my opinion, Dave. I know it sounds cliche, and I'm not trying to cop out here, but literally, like, Is Foles going to throw a pick? Is Foles going to fumble when he's sacked? Will Jay Ajayi fumble again? He got away with it. The Eagles were a little sloppy with a football against the Falcons. There's not going to be a lot of room for error in this football game, Dave. Literally a fumble here, a fumble there, man. A tip ball, missed field goal could be all the difference in the world in this football game.
It really could be that low variance. And, in fact, one of the things I think you'll see is an extremely conservative opening, because you want to wait the mistake out from the other guy.
Yep.
And that's going to be a big question about Case Keenum. And we wrote about this in the Tuesday Point Blank. In the third quarter against the Saints, Keenum had the worst back-to-back play sequence in NFL playoff history. And I went back through this and thought about, you know, one was taking the sack on third and four that cost Philadelphia a field goal attempt, or cost Minnesota a field goal attempt. And then the very next play when he was on the field, throwing an awful interception. That game went from potentially being 20-0, if the Vikings get their field goal try, to being 17-14 with Minnesota's offense only being on the field for two plays. Those were bad decisions, especially game when you're playing with the lead. You do not throw a forced interception when you're up by 10 with 1 minute left in the third quarter. You can't make that mistake. So now the question about Keenum is, okay, if he made that mistake at home with a lead and with the comfort zone, what happens to Keenum on the road under a little bit of pressure? So there, I think if you're Zimmer, you try to get the game into the second quarter, nothing-nothing or 3-3. And I think Peterson also would be more than happy to get into the second quarter, nothing-nothing.
It's a daunting task. There's a lot of numbers that are on the side of the Philadelphia Eagles. Very similar to last week, actually. Now, of course, the whole dome situation, it's not going to be 35 degrees. It's actually going to be pretty balmy. Weather will not be a factor in this football game. But number one seeds are 28-12 straight up, man, and since 1980. They just, you know, these one seeds usually take advantage, including 7-0 the last 4 years. And this one's an ugly one, too, over the years, Dave. The Minnesota Vikings have always struggled on the road in big playoff games. 2-11 straight up, Dave, in their last 13 road playoff games, the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, I don't know if I would put too much weight on that because that goes back beyond the scope of the current team. And what I like about the current team is outside of Keenum, the rest of this team is so well coached. They play such a mature brand of football. I think tactically they will be fine. And that's what made their offense good all season. They outsmarted opposing defenses. So whatever hole you had, they could find a way. They have that type of balance. Their problem is now when you play a defense that doesn't have a hole, now you've got to make a play. You've got to make something happen. This may not be the Vikings at their best offensively now.
I got burnt betting the under that Jags game because I'm an idiot, and I never bet on unders. But what do you make of this total? I mean, I am hard-pressed to see their points, but like I said, weather's not a factor. It's going to be kind of balmy for this time of the year. Weather's not a factor. It's an incredibly low number. As far as teasers are concerned, an Eagles plus 10.5 under 45 looks pretty attractive to me, even though I'm pulling for the Vikings.
Yeah, I see a lot of field goals in this game flow. These are not easy teams to score on when you get into the red zone, so I see a lot of field goals. And you know what I also see, though, Gabe, is I see coaches happy with field goals. You know, if you're Jacksonville and you're playing in New England, you want touchdowns, similar to the game at Pittsburgh last week. But in this matchup, you're third down and 8 at the 15-yard line, you might be inclined to run something a little bit safer and protect the field goal. So I think we're going to see a lot of threes out there. And even though 38 is a low number, you're still going to have to get at least 4 touchdowns on the board to get over a 38. But most times for a 38, you need 5 full touchdowns because 4 touchdowns and 3 field goals doesn't get you a win.
All right, Dave, so before we get you out of here, NBA basketball, fun night last night in the NBA. Wasn't so fun for me because I was on the Houston Rockets, but it was a fun game. You know, it was a heated game. You know, police had to intervene after in the locker room. The Houston Rockets were upset with Griffin and Austin Rivers, etc. Ben Simmons yesterday got into it with Kyle Lowry at the end of the basketball game. You know, it was a competitive day yesterday in the association. Tonight, the marquee game, the Pelicans and the Boston Celtics on the board. The Celtics haven't played since that trip to London. And one thing I noticed, Dave, with the Celtics, you know, the Celtics-Sixers game coming back from London, I was wondering how these teams would respond, you know, and we have this. These teams getting these sort of mini, these breaks, and we're seeing it in the NHL with a mandatory week off, etc. And teams are struggling coming out of the break in the NHL, actually. But the Philadelphia 76ers looked pretty fresh and energized yesterday, Dave. And I imagine, even though it's a trip to London, the players like the 3 days off after the fact once they're back home. And, you know, the NBA schedule is a grind, so I'm sort of expecting a rejuvenated and energized and an energetic Boston Celtic team tonight against the Pelican team who's been on the road for a week or so.
Yeah, what makes it fascinating, too, is what will that energy and also the downtime to get on the practice court do for what's already been the NBA's best defense? And this is what's fascinating about the Celtics. They're the number one defense by almost a basket per 100 possessions over anybody else. And that's despite the fact that this is a young team that started the season with zero chemistry of playing together. So they got disrupted early by losing Hayward. It was disrupted by not having Morris out there. They've been number one even with that. Now let's look at what happens as they learn to play together. And here's the key part, Gabe. Look at their last 10 games. They're the number one defense in the NBA over the last 10 by almost 5 full points per 100 possessions. But in that span, they played the number 2, the number 3, and the number 5 offenses, Rockets, Timberwolves, and Cavaliers. They shut all 3 of those offenses down cold, only allowing a little over 90 points a game. This Boston defense, over the second half of the season, is going to be something to watch out for.
And tonight, Dave, you wrote about this over at Sportsbook Review. You're taking a look at the Pelicans team total tonight, under the number.
Yeah, I'll tell you where there's an advantage. Pelicans are a tough matchup. They're the number 7 offensive team because they're so unorthodox. You know, so many teams don't have any bigs at all. So when you play a team with double bigs, it's a tough defensive challenge. Well, guess what Brad Stevens has been thinking about probably since he got on the plane on the way back to Boston last Thursday? Been thinking about this challenge. So Boston has had the practice time to think about Davis and Cousins, don't be surprised if they come out, put a lot of ball pressure on New Orleans, and disrupt what the Pelicans do. It looks like you're might even be able to get a 105 out there. There's been some 104, 104 and a half. I don't think the Pelicans are going to break that total tonight. I think they're going to struggle against this defense.
The Pelicans team total 105 right now. Dave likes the under. We've got to get out of here. You can read his full column with NFL analysis and tonight's NBA breakdown of the Celtics' defensive prowess over at sportsbookreview.com. Thanks for the time, Dave.
Hey, good luck, everybody.
Dave Malinsky with us. Take a quick break. Tony Sincotta joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Let's bring in Tony Sincotta. We appreciate Tony taking the time to be with us. One of his many hits of the day today, co-host of Lineup Lock Live with Dave Martinez, Monday to Friday, 6 Eastern, as well as a million other shows, including the radio show, weeknights at 11 o'clock on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I brought it up earlier. Tony's the perfect guy to talk to today. Due to the fact that he's from Boston, but he lives in Jacksonville now. So,
yeah.
Yeah, you're connected to this game, Tony.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things that, you know, I'm rooting for the Patriots, the team I grew up with, and I still have allegiance there. But I equated to back in the day, this is about 10 years ago, I went to the seventh game of an ALCS, the Red Sox and the Tampa Rays. And you know what? The Tampa Rays won. They went to the World Series. And I wasn't really brokenhearted about it because, you know what? That team was so poor and so pathetic for so long, and we had won a World Series just recently. I was like, you know what? I got the feeling I'd feel the same way if the Jaguars won this week.
Yeah, and it helps that, you know, you're a little bit you got a soft spot for the Jags now, right? You're being inundated. You're being inundated with them. So what do you think of this football game? One thing I did my intro of the show today, actually, and I think it's ironic that the Jag players were so upset with the Steelers' boasts about, you know, the night before.
Right.
And now they're guaranteeing they're going to win the Super Bowl. And they're overlooking the Patriots. The irony is gold, Tony.
They are going to – I think the Patriots win by 20. I thought it was really, really insane that the Pittsburgh offense went to town on them. And that's three out of the last 5 weeks that teams have put big points up on them. What happens is they get caught up too much in the emotional game, and they haven't figured that part out of being a young team. And I really think with the New England Patriots, a very stoic team that's going to come down, they're going to be able to put up some points against them. And I really don't think Blake Bortles has any chance of putting 40 points up on him. And I know Tom Brady is going to put up 28.
It's a good point that you just raised, Tony. You know, wise and sage. And Malinsky brought up the same thing. And I brought it up, too. I could see the Jags hanging around maybe for the first quarter, a good bet. Even the first half, hey, it's, you know, 14-10 at the half. They're battling. They're hanging around. But you just nailed it. They're an emotional team. They're an undisciplined team. They get away with manslaughter and murder on every damn play. Everybody's holding. Everyone's grabbing face masks. They play the style while they won't call it all the time. Well, they will because you're playing Pretty Boy Brady, and they don't want you in a Super Bowl. They want the Patriots in a Super Bowl. So you're going to get calls against you, and they're going to get frustrated by that. And as you stated, the mental game. Can they stay focused for 3.5 hours of real time and 60 minutes of football time? I just don't see it. You know, the Patriots have been there, done that. They got ice in their veins. I could see the Jags just sort of melting down midway through the third quarter.
I'll tell you what, I'm surprised the line makers have this line so low. I couldn't believe it.
Really? It's pretty high. It's going to get up to 10. It'll get up to 10, Tony. I think it'll get up to 10.
I said there's no way this isn't double digits. That Jacksonville team beat Tennessee twice. That Tennessee went into Foxborough, had no chance to beat them, and all of a sudden we only have an 8-point spread. How is it not double digits?
Let me ask you, I don't know if you've seen the numbers, so if you have, you can answer the question right away, but if you haven't, so they're Super Bowl numbers. You can bet these numbers right now. Okay, you can bet them. They're not fictitious. You can bet them. What do you think the Philadelphia Eagles and Patriots point spread would be?
I think the Patriots be 7.5.
Yeah, you're pretty close. They're 6.5. I thought it'd be higher. Like, should it be higher?
You know, it's crazy because you look at that Philadelphia Eagles team, and I think that it's all because of Nick Foles that we get to 7.5. I think that if Carson Wentz was playing,
it'd be three or four.
So is it a 3-point swing with one player? That's equated. It's hard to go more than that on one player.
And for the record, they had the Vikings at -1 against the Patriots last week, but it's been bet up to Patriots -2.
I would have said Patriots plus Patriots minus one, even though it's a home game for that team.
But it's not really a home game, right? It is and it isn't. It's, you know, the corporate aspect of it. There will be Viking fans there, though.
Here's what I said. This is going to be the hardest Super Bowl ticket in a long time, because if Philadelphia, those fans are fanatic and they haven't been there in a while, they'll pay big money to go out there. The Minnesota fans don't have to pay any travel cost. If they're in it, they can spend an extra $2,000 on tickets because they're going to get there. Jacksonville, all of a sudden they got these bandwagon fans. They've never been to Super Bowl before. They're going to pay big money to go to the Super Bowl. The Patriots fans have been there every year. They're the only ones that I think that might not, you know, go out there like crazy to Minnesota in the middle of winter when they have their own problems at home. I think this could be the heaviest price for a Super Bowl ticket in a long time.
We're down to four. We'll debate that. I don't have time about it, but I used to be in the ticket business. I was tweeting about that stuff last night. But let's get down to the quarterbacks right now. There's only four guys here, so let's not really overthink it. Tom Brady, 7,700. Keenum, 66. Bortles, 5. Foles, 48. It's got to be TB12 here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, anything else, you're really going outside the box. And here's the thing, like, if you go say, hey, Tony, I want to get in a tournament, you know, it's always somebody out of there. Like, who do you pick out of the other three? I think I have to go Case Keenum against the Philadelphia secondary. They left the 21st points there. And I look at the receivers. With Thielen and Stephon Diggs gives me a lot better attribute than Blake Bortles has against the New England defense. Marquise Lee is playing on one leg. He made a great catch in that game, but then we didn't see him there. D.D. Westbrook made a good play there. But there's no consistency with that Jacksonville passing offense. I think Case Keenum's the option if you go other than Brady.
All right, so looking at the running back, Deion Lewis has been a freaking monster, but you got to pay the price for him right now, $8,100. Fournette's going to get touches once again. The question is, does he get taken out of the game plan, I should say, if they fall behind? You got Murray at $5,700, Burkhead 54, Ajayi 52, McKinnon 52. How are you approaching the running backs, Tony?
I think you pay up, because I think with the wide receivers going to be a little cheaper this week than we're usually accustomed. So the thing with Fournette is if they can stay in the game, he's going to get 20-plus touches. But he was even used in the passing game a little last week. So I'd go Lewis or Fournette. And if you want to save a little money and you want to take a shot, T.J. Yeldon actually is not a bad play. He caught 3 balls last week, and I think you're going to see him get involved in the offense if New England gets ahead, where he's going to be pass-catching out of the backfield there. And then I would go with McKinnon over Latavius Murray there and get the point per reception in the passing game.
Yeah, you know what? I think the running backs this week, Tony, are going to catch a lot of passes because we have such great defenses. You know what I mean? Like Tom Brady's going to be running for his life. How many times will he just dump it off to Lewis? Case Keenum, same thing. I mean, we've got elite defenses across the board here right now playing. I think there's going to be a lot of quick hits. I'm going to be looking at Tom Brady over quarterback prop completions because I think he's going to be getting rid of the ball. But a good call by you earlier, too, and I've been talking about this. They're idiots. Todd Haley's an idiot. He's a drunk idiot. Him and his drunk wife should be fired.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they didn't learn a damn thing from the Week 5 loss. They open up with an empty back set, Tony. When I saw that, I should have aborted my Pittsburgh bet. When I saw that they open up the game with Le'Veon Bell, a wide receiver, I'm like, dear God. And then they run Le'Veon under 21-0, and he gets 20 yards. Yeah, good job there. But you know what I find crazy about this with the wide receivers is that the total is 38 in a Vikings-Eagles game. Incredibly low. The total is 46 in a Patriots game and a half. You get the Patriots, explosive offense and all this. No one's expecting points. You look at the wide receiver position. Adam Thielen and Diggs are the two highest wide receivers, Tony. Thielen 74, Diggs is 69, and then Cooks is 61, Amendola 55. And I got to tell you, Amendola's been eating it up.
Here's the hard thing. Like Jacksonville, Jalen Ramsey, arguably the top cornerback in the league, right? Who the hell is he going to cover? There is no elite wide receiver in New England. Is he going to cover Brandon Cooks? Well, Brandon Cooks just goes down the field. Then you got to deal with Delanie Amendola and Chris Hogan occasionally come out of the slot. Who's going to take that role? Then you got James White. You're going to put him one-on-one with the linebacker coming out of the backfield. So everybody thinks that Jacksonville's defense matched up, and I was like, how do they match up well? I mean, there's too many weapons here.
You know what? I'd almost like to see Ramsey on Gronk, to be honest with you. But
it makes sense. They're both huge.
Exactly.
And he's the number one guy there. I mean, people don't realize how big Jalen Ramsey is. You see him in person, this guy looks like a lineman. You say, no way that's a cornerback.
Yeah, I think he's the perfect guy. He's a safety. He's the perfect hybrid player to shadow Gronk, I think. but you're taking them out of the equation. But like you said, they're not losing sleep over Hogan, Amendola, and Cooks, even though Cooks could burn them deep. All right, we got like 30 seconds. We'll take a break. We'll talk NBA DFS with Tony on the other side. He's got a lineup put together for us. But the Gronk is 7,900. Ertz is 53. Rudolph, 45.
Yeah, Gronk's the easy play, but if you look at it, Kyle Rudolph against Philadelphia. Philadelphia is 10th in the league at defending tight ends, $4,500. You talked about the elite wide receivers, their number one stopping wide receivers. I think Kyle Rudolph gets 5 or 6 targets in this game.
I like where you're going with that, actually. I think if he's the alternative to Gronk, I would agree. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll see what Tony's got for the NBA tonight. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does our conversation with Tony Sinscotta. You can check him out at 6 o'clock on the television network with Dane Martinez talking some NBA DFS tonight, maybe a little NFL as well. Let's get right down to business, Tony. 4 games on the board this evening. As far as injuries are concerned, I saw that a lot of question marks around the Phoenix Suns this evening, but I see that T.J. Warren will be playing.
Yeah, you know, T.J. Warren is a guy that when you get in this type of situation, you worry, though, how many minutes you could go. And on a 4-game slate, you want to take a chance. So what do you play it safe? I usually try to play it safe in those type of situations. I don't want to get burnt.
All right, so what do you make of the board here tonight? Suns and Blazers, Dallas and Denver on the board. New Orleans and Boston is the marquee matchup. What are you looking at here tonight, Tony?
First thing is you wake up in the morning, right, and you see that Phoenix is playing. So you say, man, there's got to be Portland guys I like. But DraftKings did a good job at adjusting the prices against this poor defense that I think most of these Portland players are actually overpriced.
Yeah, I don't want to spend $9,300 for Lillard. That's too much.
No, it's way too much. Like they did, they put it so you couldn't take these guys. The only guy on Portland that I thought was worthy of the price was Al-Farouq Aminu.
Yeah, I'll tell you one guy actually on Phoenix, kind of flying under the radar. Listen. Is there a ton of upside? No. But he's giving you 5-6 times the value right now. Old man Chandler's been crushing the boards, Tony.
You know what's so crazy? You're 100% right. I just get so scared because it makes no sense in my mind. And sometimes common sense gets to be a problem. Is that why is he playing so much? Because you have two other centers in Monroe and Alex Len. That they should be trying to get more time out of. And they let this guy, if this guy plays 35 minutes, he'll crush that $4,500 salary every time. So I get leery sometimes going with Tyson Chandler, and he's put up some good numbers this year.
All right, a player that you and I both had our eye on, we'll blast through to a put. I don't know, we're putting Tony's lineup up, or am I just going to read it? I'm just going to blast through it. But Jamal Murray caught my eye tonight at 5,800 as well.
Yeah, the Dallas, you don't go with Dallas a lot of times because they're very good defensively. So you don't go against Dallas. But in this game, the prices have been adjusted opposite that. I think some of these Denver guys are too low priced. Jamal Murray's an absolute scoring machine. He likes to shoot for it, first point guard. I like him and Will Barton tonight in that backcourt against a Dallas team that don't defend the backcourts well.
Orlando's giving up a boatload of points. Yeah, they're giving up like 117 points a game or something like that recently. That's going to be an interesting spot. But I'm looking at Davis and Cousins tonight, and, man, Davis coming off the 83. It's like 53 DK points or more in 5 or 6 basketball games. You know, Cousins had 7 steals the other day, too. They're both a low, but I like your style, Tony. Why pick one? You're like Lou Williams. Why pick one girl when I can have them both, right? You're stacking them, baby.
Yeah, so here's the one thing. Usually don't go against the Boston Celtics because they're number one team defensively.
Yeah, they're so good defensively, but yeah.
They're poor against weak men. Al Horford's their big guy. He's no more than 6'9", right? You can beat them with big guys. And if you look at the total, it's 215. The highest total tonight is 218. So we're not far off there. I'm going to use the two best plays tonight, which I believe DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. I've got value out there that I can get a good lineup out there.
All right, so your lineup is you got Yogi Ferrell. You got Evan Fournier. You got Will Barton. I love baby Barton. I love the time he fist bumped the baby. That's like the best thing ever. Remember when he went off the floor and he fist bumped the baby?
Yes.
DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, Jamal Murray, Dwayne Powell. Tell us about Dwayne Powell tonight, $3,600.
Yeah, so he's going to get some – that front court's always been a little crowded there. But with a couple guys expected to possibly miss some time there. I'm going to get 12, 14 fantasy points here. Dallas, not a big team there. At $3,600, he's worth a flyer. I can just get 12 to 15 fantasy points there. I'll be there. And you know what's crazy is when you look at the whole situation involving Minnesota, they're not a very good defensive team either, even though Tom Thibodeau preaches it. So Orlando's been dealing with a lot of injuries, and Evan Fournier and Aaron Gordon have been getting so much usage rate that both those guys could be in play tonight if you want to extend your rosters. But look for injuries with that Orlando team, because if you get any cheap guys in there that are going to get some extra playing time, you want to attack that Minnesota team as well.
We've only got about 30 seconds left, but I've noticed you don't have any T-Wolves players in your lineup tonight. Towns is expensive at 9,500.
Yeah.
One guy that caught my eye, and he hung 50 on him, 49.5 to be exact, the first time around, was Jeff Teague.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Teague's the one guy that I get a little scared about. $6,400 is a reasonable salary, but he doesn't get in the 40-point range too much.
I know.
And if you look at it tonight, I'm going to need him to get me 32 fantasy points to be productive.
I can't disagree. I'd rather have Fournier for 51 than Teague for 64.
Yep.
I can't disagree. We got to get out of here. Tony, great stuff as always. Check out Tony at 6 o'clock on the television network. Thanks, Tony.
Hey, take care.
Plays of the day coming up next. What's up, everybody? It's time for my best bets of the day. We're not going to go crazy today. We got a ton of picks, so, you know, we're not putting $1,000 a game. We'll put it that way. But we want to win these games nevertheless. Let's start off with the T-Wolves and the Magic. Listen, the T-Wolves are scoring a lot of points right now, and the Magic are giving up a lot of points right now. I don't really want to lay 8.5 points in this game, but I will take the over 217. Give me a T-Wolf and a Boston Celtic parlay. The Celtics have been off since that trip to London, and the Sixers looked pretty good yesterday and energized and refreshed. I think Boston is going to be energized after that four-day layoff as well. Pelicans have been on the road. I like the Boston Celtics T-Wolf Moneyline Parlay minus 110. Suns and Blazers, let's go over 217. College basketball, Clemson Tigers playing good basketball this year. We bet against them last week because they were big favorites. Tonight I'm getting points. Give me the 7.5-8. I'll buy a half a point up to 8 points against the Tar Heels. Clemson, North Carolina over 147. Notre Dame Fighting Irish, going to get it done. Notre Dame minus 3. Play it on the money line or lay the 3 against the Ville. Kentucky, we're going to lay the 1 on the road against South Carolina. Oklahoma, I hate betting on all these road teams, but Oklahoma's just better than Kansas State. Oklahoma's going to get done. NHL hockey, give me a road team with the St. Louis Blues. Won't be singing the Blues after I cash a plus 130 ticket against the Leafs. And we wrap it up with the San Jose Sharks. Sharks always beat the Coyotes. They're going to get it done tonight. Once again, other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.